building before the principal changed his mind and made them stay. Or worse, someone assigned them homework. He cringed as the storm outside picked up its fury.
Not sure it's a good idea for anyone to be out in this.
Yeah, Cody agreed, but not sure how wise it is to be in here with Mason already shifted and the others on the verge of turning into animals either. No sooner had she finished her sentence than a pack of wolves came tearing down the hallway. Since they were in the cafeteria, out of the line of sight, the wolves ran past them toward the exposed students who were at their lockers. Ah, crap. The wolves attacked without pause. The humans screamed and ran for cover as best they could. Some even tried to climb straight up the lockers. Wincing, Nick knew he couldn't stand by and do nothing. Before he could move, Cody grabbed an unattended lacrosse stick and ran after them to protect the humans. By the time Nick caught up to her, she was barely holding the wolves off. Stone, he could tell by the size, color, and ferocity of the beast who'd attacked him on previous occasions, had the scoop in his massive jowls and was trying to wrench it free to bite Cody. It was so tempting to send a jolt through him and watch him change into a naked human in the middle of the hallway. Only the screaming, fleeing Berettos kept Nick from it. While Nick might want to traumatize Stone to get back at him for all the times he'd embarrassed Nick in public, no need in sending the innocent into therapy. Or blinding himself with the unwanted sight of Stone's hideous naked body. Instead, he whistled for the wolves, and then ran so that they'd chase him back toward the gym. They wasted no time in coming for him, like he was the only bowl of Alpo to be had. It was a pants-wetting kind of intensity. And as Nick slid through the gym door and Mason sank fangs into his arm, he regretted that decision in the worst sort of way, especially since the room was filled with witnesses who prevented him from using his demonic powers to get Mason off him. Dang you nonsensical rules of sanity, dang you all! Mason dragged him down, hard. Nick tried to pry his arm free as the rest of the pack descended on him with vicious bites. Yeah, this had definitely been a better idea in the abstract. The reality was much more painful than he'd imagined, and it made him really miss Caleb. At least with Caleb around, his enemies had another moving target to chase and chew on.
Get off him!
Cody tossed a net over Mason she must have manifested out of the sight of the others. She dragged him away from Nick. Stone went for her throat. Reacting on pure instinct and forgetting the rules about using magic in plain sight, Nick threw his hand out and zapped him. The bolt sent Stone skidding into the bleachers, where he flashed from human to wolf and back again. Nick started to panic about his slip until Cody distracted them with a scream. As the teachers and adult wearers took over herding the wolves, he saw that the Zeitjagers were back and watching everything closely. Too closely for Nick's sanity. Without a word, Cody pulled him into the hallway, out of the line of fire. Nick took a second to make sure no one could overhear them.
What are the odds that one of the werehunters made a bad time jump, and that's what brought out our ugly giant plague doctors?
Sadly, the young wares do that all the time. No, something much more treacherous is going on here.
Like,
no idea. But it has to be bad. I've only heard of Zeitjagers appearing in number right before something catastrophic.
And given the fact that she was a warrior who'd been killed during Armageddon and sent back in time to stop it from happening, that basically said it all. They were screwed. Sighing, Nick looked up at the ceiling.
I swear, if I survive this, I will never, ever say that a day is going good again in my life. Lesson learned, all days suck from now on.
As the adult squires began to arrive to evacuate the school, Nick saw Bubba Burdett come in among them. At 6'4", and being a former college football linebacker turned zombie survivalist, Bubba tended to stand out even in a crowd. He was a strange combination of horror movie buff and redneck, complete with a well-trimmed beard and black hair. But the one thing everyone knew about Big Bubba Burdett, he hated mornings with a burning passion. The fact that he was awake and here at this ungodly early hour more than anything else confirmed that the end of the world was upon them. His heart pounding, Nick met Cody's gaping expression.
What new hell monkey wakens?
Bubba snorted at his sarcasm.
After all the weirdness of the last few days and what with this storm moving in like it did and throwing down hailstones the size of baseballs, me and Mark wanted to make sure you and your mom were safe. I left him with Charisse and promised her I'd see you home.
He scowled as he saw the blood on Nick's arm from where Mason had taken a bite out of him.
What happened? We need to get you to a hospital.
That mixture of raw fear and concern in Bubba's blue eyes caught Nick off guard. When Nick had been sucked into an alternate universe, Bubba had been his real, natural father there. A part of him he didn't want to acknowledge had kind of liked it. Since his own dad had spent the majority of Nick's life incarcerated or trying to kill him, Bubba had been the only real father figure Nick had ever known. At least until 2 years ago, when the immortal Dark Hunter Kirian had saved his life and given him a part-time job. Now Kirian was like a second dad to him, which, while annoying at times, was also kind of nice. There was nothing Nick wouldn't do for either man.
I'm fine, it's just a flesh wound.
Bubba narrowed his gaze on him, then looked at Cody.
Is he lying to me, Miss Cody?
She flashed a playful grin.
Doubtful. You know, Nick, if it was really bad, he'd be whining like a baby and begging for his mom and a lollipop and sticker.
Bubba laughed before he took Nick's backpack.
Come on, runt. Let me get you home to your mama. She's worried sick.
He glanced around.
So where's your other cohort? Not like Caleb to leave you alone. Way he hangs all over you, boy, I keep waiting for a wedding announcement.
Nick snorted. Sent home for hurling.
Lovely.
Not really, except for when he scored on the shoes of my least favorite teacher. That was pretty epic. Bubba shook his head.
Did you drive?
Nah.
After I got jumped, Ma wants me to, but seriously? Nick had to force himself to not roll his eyes, since he only lived a block and a half away. Takes longer to find a parking spot than it does to walk it. This time, Bubba broke out into laughter.
Being the only son of an overly protective southern mother, I get it. In a way, only you know. They are truly God's very special creatures.
Heavy emphasis on the creature part, especially those long, clinging, fun-sucking tentacles that wrap around and hold you down so you can't breathe.
Amen, little brother. Amen.
Cody grinned at them. Your mama still in town? She asked Bubba.
Nah, she left last night. Thank God. I wouldn't want her trying to travel in this mess. I'd be the basket case if she was at the airport today.
You two, Cody said with a laugh. I don't know why you pick on your mothers when you're both worse about their safety than they are with yours. Nick, your mom's younger than Bubba, and I've seen you hold onto her arm when she's going up and down stairs.
Hey, now, you don't know.
I've seen her trip on straight ground many times. She could fall, hurt her arm. Then I'd have to actually wash a dish for myself. God forbid that humanity. I'm not even sure how to work a sink. Could fall in and drown myself on accident or something.
Laughing even harder at something she knew wasn't true, since Nick washed dishes most nights while his mom worked, Cody shook her head.
Like I said, neither of you has room to complain about them being overprotective. Nick paused as he reached the doors and saw the storm outside. The sky was pitch black. The rain and hail hit the building so hard it sounded like gunfire. He scowled at the sight of the rain's red spatter patterns.
Is that
blood? Cody finished for him. It's raining blood.
Nick met Bubba's horrified gaze.
Zombies?
Grimacing, Bubba shoved at him.
Don't sass me, boy. You're not that cute in high heels.
A chill went down Nick's spine as he turned to see the Zeitjager behind him, watching them with great curiosity. They had stopped the apocalypse. He and Caleb had sealed the portal before the Usumgalu could gather and summon their armies to attack. Why was this still happening? It made no logical sense. What else could possibly cause something like this to happen? He looked at Cody. Are you sure this isn't from the Aralim Civil War?
No, Nick. I have a bad feeling it's from something a whole lot worse.
His stomach shrank with dread. A stark, cold terror filled him. What could be worse? Nick asked, without thinking. No sooner had those words come out of his mouth than a swarm of bat-sized mosquitoes swarmed, driving parents, students, squires, and faculty back into the building. They screamed and ran, fleeing the pests and seeking shelter. Nakoda glared furiously at him.
What did I tell you about saying things like that, Nick?
Not to be stupid. But that was like asking him not to breathe. It seemed to come a little too naturally to him most days.
At least they're not loc-
She covered his lips before he could finish saying locusts, which was probably a good thing given what kept happening to them, but Nick stumbled back as a weird feeling came over him. One second, everything was weird. The next, it went dark. He struggled to breathe against a frigid, cold calm that invaded him. It paralyzed every part of his being until he couldn't see or hear. His eyes rolled back in his head, and his knees buckled.
Nick!
Cody panicked at the way he hit the ground. It was as unnatural as the sudden pallor of his skin. Terrified and shaking, she met Bubba's gaping stare as he knelt beside them. Bubba gasped in his own alarm.
Nick, come on, talk to me. Say something stupid, boy.
Yet it was too late. Tears filled Cody's eyes as grief choked her. She couldn't find Nick's pulse in his wrist or neck. He wasn't moving. Not breathing. No. It couldn't be. Yet it was. Nick was dead.
Chapter 4
Nick choked and wheezed as someone gave him mouth-to-mouth.
That better be you, Cody. I swear to God, if it's Bubba, I'm about to need a truckload of Listerine.
Bubba snorted as he rolled Nick over toward her.
For the record, it was. Again, you ain't that cute in high heels, boy. Well, I guess I'd have done it for you if I had to. But only because your mama is, and she'd have stabbed me someplace real uncomfortable with hers if I let something happen to your rotten little hide.
Laughing, Cody brushed the hair back from Nick's face.
You okay?
Yeah, what happened?
Her brow lined with worry. She kept her hand on his cheek.
You stopped breathing and turned a shade of blue I only want to see in your eyes, not on your skin or lips.
Grateful he'd remembered to shave extra close that morning, Nick rolled to his back and scowled up at his friends, especially as he realized there was a crowd gathered around them.
Great. An audience for this embarrassing display, just what he craved, because puberty just wasn't humiliating enough on its own.
Kill me now.
Bubba held him down as he started to rise.
I've already called an ambulance. You ain't going nowhere till you get checked down. Not with that heart condition you have. My mama and yours would slaughter me.
He's right, Mr. Head said as he pushed through the nosy onlookers.
Don't move, Nick. Just lie still till they get here. Last thing we need's a lawsuit.
Double awesome. More hospital bills. At this rate, he was going to be indentured to the insurance company for the rest of his natural life. Grinding his teeth, he met Cody's worried gaze. He didn't really have a heart condition, and they both knew it. His early childhood health problems had stemmed from his human body rejecting the demonic parts of his DNA. He was a freak of nature who should have never survived his father's biological gifts.
Guys, I really do feel fine.
He met Bubba's gaze.
Come on, triple threat. Let my Nicky go.
I'm not chancing it, nor am I facing your mama without a thorough screening from a licensed doc. I happen to value and appreciate all my body parts being in their current locations.
Nick groaned in agony as he regretted ever allowing Bubba to take his mom out on a date. They'd only gone out once. But since then, Bubba had assumed the role of Nick guardianship with a terrifying iron grip.
Then, please don't call her. Go get her and take her to the hospital to meet me. She'll be too tore up to drive, and I don't want her out in this mess alone. She drives bad enough as it is.
Mark's with her. I'll have him drive her over while I follow the ambulance.
Nick gaped at the mere suggestion. Are you nuts?
Have you seen the way that man drives? He's worse than she is. I don't know what loon approved his license, but dang, I swear he found it in the bottom of a cereal box, and he took lessons from Mario and Luigi. Snorting, Bubba pulled out his cell phone to call Mark and tell him what had happened. Before Nick could continue his protests, the EMTs arrived. Cody stepped back so that they could check his vitals. With the exception of a fever, they confirmed that there was nothing wrong with him. But because of his heart condition, they insisted that he go in for more testing. It was so frustrating. And scary, since there was always a chance that they might actually uncover something abnormal about him, something that could land him locked in a lab somewhere for testing, since he was about as abnormal as any X-Men could be. Of course, it didn't help that he had a new Hellmonkey best friend, in that one of the Zeitjagers decided to hitch a ride with them as they took Nick to the ambulance and closed the doors. Why did that have to be his new psycho stalker? Couldn't there be a supermodel somewhere, obsessed with gawky teenage boys with bad wardrobes and Velcro mother issues? What did he want with him anyway? And why couldn't anyone else see it? He stared at the Hellmonkey. The Hellmonkey Zeitjager twisted the sickle in his hand and stared back. Very disturbing. While the EMT kept an eye on his vitals, Nick continued to watch his silent harbinger. Cody slid carefully past it and sat in the corner, out of the way. Nick glanced pointedly at the Zeitjager, then her. "Why is he still with us?" Cody shrugged. "I can't exactly ask when we have company. If I do that, they might take us both to the psych ward." At this point, he was almost willing to chance it. Anything to get to the bottom of what was going on. "Some weather, huh?" the EMT asked them as they were shut in and the driver took off. "Yeah." Nick watched as the woman rechecked his blood pressure. "Still a normal teen, right? I haven't mutated into an Avenger or anything?" She laughed. "Not yet, Tony Stark. Are you trying?"
"Some days."
"I'd like to try being a billionaire playboy for a change." She shook her head. "Well, you might get your chance. Given the size of the mosquitoes we had to battle to get inside your school, it wouldn't surprise me if they weren't refugees from a nearby radiated science facility of some kind."
"Probably gotten into some of my mama's uncle's Bayou moonshine. She always said that stuff could bring the dead back to life and strip the finish off anything, including cars and kidneys. Wouldn't surprise me if it could mutate a few skeeters, too."
The EMT laughed so hard she choked. "Is he always like this?" she asked Cody. "Yes, he is."
"Girl, you got your hands full, don't you?"
"You have no idea." And still, the Zeitjager stared at them, as if waiting for something more unholy to happen. It was so creepy and disturbing, but not nearly as much as the storm that continued to slam against the ambulance until it was forced to slow down to a crawl to get through the streets that were beginning to flood. Even the EMT started sweating. Their nervousness wasn't helped as the mosquitoes began to gather on the outside of the truck to the point that the evil beasts completely covered the windows. The EMT gulped audibly.
"It's like one of them horror movies, ain't it?"
"Yeah," Nick breathed. "And I didn't even play with a Ouija board this time."
Cody snorted. "Maybe this is one of those 100-year storms or something that drove the bugs out of their nests. You know, the kind of thing that we'll tell our grandkids about." The EMT's face paled as more mosquitoes hit the truck.
"Maybe. But I've never heard anything like this."
No sooner had she finished those words than something struck the ambulance and sent it careening. Nick grabbed Cody and shielded her and the EMT as the ambulance turned onto its side and slid down the street. Loose objects flew around them, striking his body and bouncing off them. While the EMT screamed and Cody wrapped herself around him, he used his powers and kept the women safely cocooned and padded from harm until the truck stopped and everything settled down. For a full minute, he didn't move. Not until the door was wrested off by an unnatural force that skittered down his spine. The EMT shouted out prayers as Cody pushed herself back to deal with their latest threat. The winds howled,
A black smoke rushed forward into the ambulance like giant talons, freezing everything it touched. The EMT shrieked and crawled away from it. She tried to hide as best she could. Frost covered the ambulance and turned all surfaces white and brittle, yet they were hot to the touch. Rising up like some ghastly, black, misty angel, the smoke spread out to form a body and wings. It wore a cowl that covered its head and hid its features.
"Fringe guard?"
Nick asked Cody, assuming it was one of the fierce creatures that protected the boundary between the human world and the spiritual one.
She shook her head. "He's demonic, and he's definitely after you, probably for the bounty, but not a guard."
The Zeitjager made a hissing noise as it shirked away from Nick's pursuer.
Yeah, that ain't good.
Nick used his powers to daze the EMT so that she wouldn't understand what was happening or see anything clearly. The last thing any of them needed was for a professional Barretos to see what was going on and lose her mind over it. Most people couldn't handle what they dealt with on a day-to-day basis. He pulled back slowly from Cody.
"Why is the Zeitjager afraid of my new friend?"
"I don't think he is."
She might be right. The Zeitjager seemed to be waiting for Nick to die.
"Sorry to disappoint.
He wasn't about to go down today, especially not for this ugly beastie, and not for something as ridiculous as money." Rising to his feet, he blasted the demon back and slammed his fist into its jaw. "Yeah, okay, that seriously hurt. He'd cry about it later, if he survived." With a fierce shriek, the thing manifested a sword. It turned and narrowly missed, taking Nick's head. Nick ducked, but Cody caught the blade with her own sword before it could kill him and kicked the demon back out of the ambulance and into the streaming rain. The two of them went at it. He started to help and stopped himself, knowing she could handle it and wouldn't appreciate his interference any more than he would. Besides, she was much better with a sword than he was, since she had centuries more experience using one, and they'd made a pact to never tread on each other's expertise in a fight. He respected her abilities, and she respected his. Instead, he went to check on the EMTs to make sure they were okay and stable and that more help was on the way for them. As he moved past the Zeitjager, it cocked its head to stare at him.
"What?"
Nick asked it in a challenging tone. It vanished instantly. So did the mosquitoes, and the rain slacked off too.
"Yeah, okay. That was just weirder than holding Mardi Gras in June. Finding snow in August, or Bubba in a tie and business suit, made no sense whatsoever."
Trying not to think about it, he moved to help the EMT who'd been tending him. She was shaken up and still dazed, but appeared to be physically okay. He left the rear of the ambulance to check the driver, who was unconscious. Worse, the driver was wedged in the wreckage and trapped behind the wheel. Since Nick couldn't get him out, Nick returned to the rear to look for some way to cut the driver's seatbelt and pry the wheel away from his body. While Nick searched, Cody quickly dispatched the demon. As soon as she finished, she returned to his side, but they had no way of freeing the trapped driver, so they took turns maintaining pressure on a tourniquet against the driver's wound where he'd been injured in the crash. The other EMT kept checking on the ETA for another ambulance. Cody frowned as she scanned the street while they listened to all the calls on the ambulance's radio.
"I thought Bubba was following us."
"We must have lost him in the rain." Cody used her powers to disguise her sword as an umbrella that she held over him and the two EMTs.
"What happened to the Zeitjager?"
"Don't know. He vanished." Crossing her arms over her chest, she shivered.
"This is bad, Nick.
Real bad."
"I know, Cher. I can feel it."
She jerked her chin toward the smoldering remains of the demon she'd dispatched.
"They're coming for you, Nick. Harder and stronger than ever before."
She shivered.
"Not just noir. This is, I don't know. It's not normal. It's unlike anything I've ever felt before."
"Oh, goody. Just what he wanted to hear. That made his day all the brighter."
Nick fell silent as he heard the next call on the radio and the address for it. It was one he knew all too well.
His heart stopped beating in stark, cold terror as he met Cody's shocked expression.
That's my mom.
Laguerre smiled at Grimm as she entered his office and found him at his desk.
Our friend just returned home with a gift for us. The king is in check.
A slow smile spread across his face.
So soon.
Easy enough. When you have the pieces all in place, I told you. The Malachi trusts our newest ally. He didn't even see it coming. He has no idea that he's being tested, and that if he fails, he loses everything.
So it seemed.
Where is his mother?
An evil laugh escaped her beautiful lips.
In some place, safe.
Grimm winced at the thought of the last place anyone would look for Charisse Gaucher.
Gah, I hate that hole.
Most beings do. It's why it was chosen for her prison. He'll never find her there.
Grimm saluted her for her cold, calculated choice.
What if our king chooses to sacrifice his queen to the cause?
He won't. She's his raison d'être. Nick would give us his Erelim love before he'd allow his mother to die. Whoever controls Charisse controls Nick. You know that.
But have you ever wondered why?
Laguerre scowled.
What do you mean?
Think about it. First, Adarian gives his life for her. And now Nick. What is so special about this one particular human that two Malachis are willing to kill themselves to keep her safe?
She shrugged.
Love. It's a useless, pesky emotion to feel. Adarian fell in love with her, and for that pathetic reason, valued her life over his own. Nick, because she's his mother, and he adores her. Even more ridiculous, if you ask me.
And still that seemed too simple for Grimm to accept it. Why would Adarian care? What would make a creature so foully cruel and uncaring, so selfish and cold, take notice of a tiny, frail woman? Well, Charisse was attractive. There were millions of other women who were more so. Millions of women who would have appealed to a Malachi. What had been so special about her that Adarian, after so many centuries of being so careful, would claim her as the mother of his heir? And then to protect her to such an extent that he'd ultimately died for her. It just didn't make sense. It never had. No, there was more to this. There had to be. More to Charisse Gaucher than a simple frail human mother. Anytime Grimm had ever threatened to harm or even approach Charisse, Adarian had gone nuclear. In this game of life and death, of winner take the world, she had been completely off limits to all of them. The one card no one could play. The one ace that would make Nick fold. Now, Grimm finally had her in his hands. And it was time he learned why this woman alone held the ultimate sway over the two most powerful Malachis who'd ever been born. She'd already caused the death of one, and she was about to be the death of the other. Chapter 5. Nick used his powers to shield his presence from the police who had the small parking lot for his condo cordoned off. Dazed and pale, Bubba sat beneath a large black umbrella on the wet back door stoop Nick had sprinted down just a short time ago as he headed off to school. He held a bloody Georgia Tech baseball cap that Nick knew belonged to Mark while he talked to the police and answered their questions. Sick to his stomach, Nick listened for details about what had happened.
I can't believe this.
Bubba wadded the black cap in his fist as he looked around the parking lot.
Gonna go now?
He asked the cop who was interviewing him.
Mark don't like hospitals, and I don't want him waking up alone in one. More than that, I don't want Nick finding out about his mama from a stranger. That boy don't need no more hurt on him. He just lost his daddy not that long ago. And he thinks the world of his mama. This is the last thing that boy needs to hear when he's off by himself. He's just a kid.
I don't want him to think he's alone in the world when he's not. He needs somebody at his side right now, helping him make some sense of this.
The police officer nodded. We have everything we need. You're free to go.
As Bubba headed for his SUV, Officer Davis stopped him.
Burdett, let us do our job. There's no need for you to get involved in this. We'll find her.
Fury darkened Bubba's eyes.
You better. Otherwise, this isn't going to be a mugging and missing persons report. It'll be a homicide investigation, and I can assure you, you won't ever find a body.
Boy, you better remember, you're talking to law enforcement.
A sinister smile curved Bubba's lips.
Yeah, I know. Same law enforcement that never caught the ones who killed my wife and son. And that ain't happening to Nick. He don't deserve that, not while I'm here to stop it. So you better find whoever did this before I do, because I promise you, there won't be enough left of them to ID when I get my hands on them. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to check on my friends and let them know I'm here for them.
Horrified and trembling over what he was seeing and hearing, Nick couldn't breathe as he watched Bubba get into his SUV and drive off. Someone had taken his mom? For real? I'm so sorry, Nick. Unable to cope with it all, he barely registered Cody's heartfelt words. His mind was whirling too fast. Unlike the police and Bubba, he knew they weren't looking for human perps. A human would never have gotten past Mark. His friend was too well-trained and skilled for that. No, this had the stink of supernatural all over it. Was that why Caleb was sick? Why the weather was so bad? Why that crazy demon had come after him in the ambulance? And the killer mosquitoes had attacked? Had it all been a distraction? Something to keep them away from Nick's home so that his enemies could draw her out of their protected condo and kidnap his mom? Would they dare? Knowing that once Nick had her free of their grasp, he'd tear them to pieces. Messing with the Malachi was a dark, dangerous thing for anyone to do, especially when Nick didn't have full control over that part of himself. More like the Malachi controlled him right now, which made him akin to Cujo on steroids with a Godzilla complex. Whenever it broke free, there was always a chance that he might not recover and that it would take him over completely, that he'd never be him or human again. While Noir might think he could control him, Nick wouldn't play that bet. If the ancient god couldn't control his father back in the days when the god had more strength, odds were he'd never be able to leash the Ambrose beast now that Noir had spent countless centuries growing weaker. But none of that mattered right now. Only his mom did. Nick winced as panicked fear for her consumed him. How could this have happened? They purposefully kept his home shielded. No one should have been able to find his mother. No one knew he was the Malachi, or even where he lived. That's not true. One very evil little beastie was currently residing in his home. Zev knew exactly who and what he was. How important his mother was to him. Bile rose in his throat as he remembered the warnings Caleb had given him about saving Zev and taking him in. He was the only enemy who knew all about Nick and where he lived and breathed, how to cripple him. Zev had betrayed the good guy side to Noir once before. He'd supposedly led their enemies straight to his own family to be slaughtered by Noir's army. It was why Caleb had refused to allow Zev to live in his home, even though they were brothers. Why Nick had been forced to keep the Sarudara, the Malachi's blood general, in his condo. Caleb wouldn't allow Zev anywhere near him without viciously attacking him. If Zev could do that to Caleb, Zev's betrayed me. Just like Caleb had said he would. No good deed goes unpunished. It was something both his boss, Kirian, and Asheron had said to him repeatedly. Cody bit her lip. Nick, what are you thinking? What's that look mean? Furious, he ignored Cody as he teleported into his room. With his vision darkened by Malachi bloodlust, Nick found Zev right where he'd left him when he headed off to school. Asleep in his bed, as if everything was right in the world, like nothing bad had happened. That only added to his rage. How dare the ancient being lie here, as if the world wasn't in chaos, as if his mother hadn't been taken by God only knew who or what. She could be dead already.
tortured. Wanting blood and vengeance in the worst way, Nick growled low and yanked the blanket off him. Zev came awake with an equal amount of defiant fury. Turning and flipping into a crouch, he hissed like a cat, exposing a set of jagged teeth. His rusty sea-blue eyes held a diamond-shaped pupil as he angled his arm up to blast Nick, only to realize who his attacker was. Since he was enslaved to the Malachi, he couldn't physically hurt him, so his eyes and teeth returned to normal while he braced himself for Nick to beat him. It was what Nick's father would have done to him for the affront. But as Nick saw the deep, vicious scars that marred every inch of Zev's lengthy body, and in particular the two that marked where his wings had been savagely ripped off his back as punishment for his crimes, he calmed down. While Nick had no doubt that Zev was a fierce, deadly creature capable of ruthless violence and betrayal, he no longer thought he was responsible for his mother's abduction. Surely, Zev wouldn't have gone back to sleep after taking her. That would have been all kinds of stupid, and Zev was anything but dumb. Had he taken his mom, he'd have known to run to the highest hills he could find for fear of what Nick would do to him once he found out about it. Cody drew up short as she entered the room behind Nick and saw Zev huddled naked on the bed. Squeaking, she quickly turned around and dodged back into the hallway.
"Sorry, Zev."
Still, Zev didn't move or speak as he stared up at Nick with a brutal intensity that waited for Nick to unleash his worst wrath on him. And that, too, drove the last of the Malachi anger out of Nick. Having been misjudged by most everyone around him, he wasn't real big on doing that to others. He handed the blanket back to Zev. "Didn't you hear the thunderstorm?" Zev covered himself.
"What storm?"
He scratched at his ear, then raked his hand through the garishly bright red and yellow hair he'd been cursed to bear, trying to smooth it down.
"There was hail, pounding thunder, a blood rain," Cody said as she came back into the room.
She eyed Nick suspiciously.
"Are you okay?"
"Not really," but Nick nodded anyway, since he was no longer on the verge of ripping Zev's throat out or shifting into his Malachi form. "My mother was kidnapped from the parking lot outside," he glared at Zev.
"Did you not hear it?"
Zev brushed his hand over the ancient words bearing his cursed fate that were branded into the flesh of his torso.
"You think I did it?"
"I don't know what to think. Honestly, I'm too pissed off to really focus right now. I just want to beat the crap out of someone, and since you're here, and taller, bigger, and meaner, you make a good target, bud."
Cody placed a comforting hand on his shoulder. "That's the Malachi talking."
"I know, but knowing doesn't change the fact I want to kick the snot out of whoever did this, or failing that, whoever happens to be close by."
Nick locked gazes with Zev.
"I just find it odd that no one knew where my mom was until you moved in. Now, I swear, I didn't betray you. Why would I? I don't know, Zev. I don't even know who or what you really are. Every time I ask, you dodge the question like a bullet aimed for your temple."
Zev finally stood to his full 6'6" height. As he gripped the blanket around him, his angry gaze went to Cody, then back to Nick.
"Fine. You want the truth. Before my powers were stripped as punishment and I was damned by the source gods, I was the god Darazerxes, cousin and friend to the firstborn Malachi."
Shocked that he finally had an answer about Zev's past, Nick stood there as the truth slowly sank in. Zev had known the very first Malachi.
Damn. While he'd known Zev was old, the first of the Malachi's generals, he'd had no idea just how old that was until now. Never would he have guessed that Zev was related to the Malachi demon bloodline, that he'd actually known Monacribos.
"You were there? In the very beginning?"
He gave a curt nod. "Even though we'd been friends during the first War of the Gods, I fought against the Malachi and his army. Against my own mother and her sister.
I was the reason your great ancestor was defeated, cursed, and enslaved. It was for that betrayal against them that I was set up, betrayed, and punished by all those I called ally, including my own brother, who will never again have faith in me for anything. My mother and aunt strove to teach me a vital lesson about trusting others, and it is one I learned well indeed. No matter how much of yourself you give, no matter how much you bleed, in the end, they believe whatever lie they want to believe about you. They see only the worst, in spite of the fact that you only gave them your best, and there's nothing you can do or say to change another's mind, ever.
Zev's eyes clearly telegraphed the depth of his anguish.
The real truth never catches up to the venom enemies spew against you. So I don't expect you to believe me about today or anything else no one ever has. My mother personally saw to it that no one would ever put me at their back again. Not for any reason.
Wait, Cody said with a scowl. The Sephiroth general, Jared, was the one who ended that war.
No. He naively betrayed his Sephiri army to the Dark Powers and put down his own soldiers. But I was the god who ended the war by making sure the Mavromino were cut off from this world. So after Braith abandoned her siblings for the deal they made against her child, it was my blood used to seal those original gates to Asmodea. My blood that continues to hold them back from this world.
Cody gasped. That's why you're the Malachi's blood general. You're the one who locked Azura and Noir in their prison. Zev gave a slow, single nod.
And it's my blood, through the Malachi's hand and magic, that's needed to unlock it and release them back into this realm.
Completely still, Nick was trying to digest that and not lose his mind in the process. The Mavromino, which could be both singular or plural, was the essence of all darkness, the great evil that had spawned the three primal dark gods, Azura, Braith, and Noir. From a forbidden affaire de coeur that had ended tragically, Braith had birthed the first Malachi and seen her child cursed by the gods of light, who demanded the Malachi's wife and child be sacrificed to appease them. Heartbroken, and with no other choice about the matter, Braith had vanished and left her son to become the property of her evil siblings, Azura and Noir. To never again see her child, if she wanted him to live. Since the day they'd been locked away from the world of man, Azura and Noir had been trying to get back to it and restart the war they'd lost. Each generation of Malachi had been a tug of war of wills between the two ancient gods and the Malachi, who was both a weapon and a tool for them. Without Braith, Azura and Noir lacked the total control they needed for the Malachi to make him do their bidding. No matter how hard they tried, they could never bring him under full heel. And so the balance between good and evil had been maintained. Until now. Nick was a very different beast. No one knew why, but he was much, much stronger than his predecessors. He alone could tip the balance into the Dark God's favor and allow them to finally defeat the Kalosum and forever extinguish the side of light in the world of man. Worse, something was going to realign in the future that would bring Braith home, something that would make Nick snap and side with her against the world. Together, they would bring about Armageddon. No one knew what would cause that, either, not even Ambrose. But it was coming. All they knew for a fact was that Noir and Azura were hell-bent on claiming Nick as soon as possible, that if they were to lay hands on him, he'd be in worse shape than Zev, and he'd never again know freedom, never again be human. Yet there was also a prophecy that said Nick was the only Malachi who could change and become a force for good. If they could find a way to anchor him to the Colossum, they could forever alter the course of history.
It was all up to him, and him alone. But it was something much easier said than done, since the Malachi was born of pure wrath and hatred, born of violence, to do violence. His nature was to harm and spew venom, to kill and to maim. Kindness and love didn't come easy to him. None before Nick held any understanding of those words. The only reason Nick did was because of his saintly mother. Should he ever lose her, everything would come undone. He would lose himself to the darkness and become the soulless Malachi, an unfeeling, invincible killing machine. Cody laughed nervously as she faced Zev.
Jeez, no wonder Caleb was so nervous about you being free.
Nick frowned.
What do you mean?
She released a deep breath.
Don't you see, Nick? Zev's one of the keys to unleash Noir and Azura. It's what makes his being free so dangerous. So long as Zev remains in this dimension, you're just one step closer to being the very thing you don't want to become. He's not just a god. He's a key.
Maybe. But throwing Zev into a pit and locking him there to be abused when he'd done nothing to deserve it didn't seem like the way to redemption either. To him, that lack of regard for someone else's life and well-being was more in line to becoming the Malachi than his stupidity in taking a chance on someone who appeared to need kindness, even though everyone said he shouldn't. So long as this act of charity only bit Nick on the butt, and not someone he cared for, he could live with the consequences. He didn't want to be that guy who let other people make up his mind for him. But there was one question he had for Zev. Who's your mother? Zev pointed to his vivid blue eyebrows, another part of his curse, and spoke the last name Nick ever expected to hear.
Azura, firstborn of all evil. She seduced my father, Verlin, in an attempt to control and manipulate him. I was nothing but a tool to her, and a source of continual aggravation to my father, who despised me for binding him to her.
He swallowed.
Like you, I was born of two warring natures that constantly pulled at me. But unlike you, I never chose good out of any kind of loyalty or decency to the Colossum. Rather, I did it defiantly as a way of striking back at my mother and making her regret and curse my conception and birth.
And what of your father? Cody asked.
Zev laughed bitterly.
What of him?
Aren't you loyal to him?
His features turned to stone as he glanced away from them.
After what he and Caleb did to me, I have loyalty to nothing and no one. We have a mutual understanding. Verlin never wanted to be my father. I never wanted to be his son.
But Nick didn't miss the pain that lay beneath the dry delivery of those words. Their rejection had hurt Zev so deeply that he'd been left with the same choice Nick had faced with his own father. Deny any want of love. It was easier that way, to pretend you didn't care, that you didn't need or want your father, but deep down in places you didn't want to own up to, you knew the truth. It always cut and bled, an open wound that wanted what they would never give. A single damn about you. And that was why Nick couldn't turn his back on Zev, why he'd kept him here when everyone else told him he was an idiot for it. He knew that same pain too intimately to dole it out to someone else. He and Zev were brothers in pain, brothers in heart. Nick couldn't throw Zev aside like everyone else had done him and leave him to rot alone. It just wasn't in him to be that cold. His mother had taught him better than that. Zev locked gazes with Nick. There was so much agony and need inside those hazel eyes that it was hard for Nick to see what he himself kept hidden from the world reflected back at him.
I told you when you brought me here, Malachi, that I have no understanding of kindness or love. You should have left me in my prison, like all the Malachis before you. It's where I belong. It's all I understand.
Nick heard those words that sent a chill down his spine. They were so similar to what his father had told him from the cradle. Put no one at your back unless you want them to plant a knife in your spine. And yet, he sensed something more inside Zev. His instincts told him that Zev wasn't quite the badass he pretended to be, that there was a vulnerability deep inside him he denied, a need for acceptance that Nick related to. Maybe he was wrong, but every part of himself told him that Zev wasn't quite as evil as the ancient wanted him to believe, even if he was the son of Azura. Of course, that was easy for him to say, being the son of the Malachi. He didn't want to be judged for his parentage either. He wanted to believe they were both better than their genetics. Besides, Zev wouldn't have fought to save them if he really didn't care. Wouldn't have been wounded protecting them, nor would he have gone back to save Cody when he could have left her trapped between worlds forever. Zev could deny it all he wanted, but he had a heart, and he understood decency and kindness both. Not to mention he was older than anyone Nick knew, even Asheron, who was over 11,000 years old. Right now, they needed that advantage. If Zev had known the first Malachi, then maybe, just maybe, he would know some way to keep Nick from turning into the monster Ambrose. It was worth a shot. And at this point, sadly, it was the only chance they really had. Nick nudged him toward the closet. "Go on and get dressed, Zev," he said gently. "We've had a bad morning, and my mom's missing. Caleb's sick, and..."
"What do you mean, sick?"
Zev asked, interrupting him. "He has some kind of cold." Zev's jaw dropped.
"No, that's not possible."
Nick exchanged a frown with Cody as he caught the underlying tone of Zev's voice. "You know what's wrong with him?"
Any other gods infected?"
Nick shook his head. "Caleb's a demon, not a god." As soon as he said that, he remembered that wasn't entirely true.
"Malthus is a demigod. We have the same father, Verlin. And while a demon can't get sick, there was an illness my mother crafted that can strike down the ancient gods, including Caleb, should he come into contact with it."
Nick struggled with that concept. "That doesn't even make sense. How could something make a god sick and not a demon?"
"When it's strictly targeted to them. It was biological warfare designed to take down an entire pantheon at my mother's command. She was rather bitchy that way, back in her time."
Cody gasped in alarm. "Does that include you?"
Zev laughed. "You honestly think my mother would spare me any pain?"
He pointed to the words of his curse on his torso that showed exactly how little his mother had cared whether or not her son was left to wallow in eternal misery. She winced visibly at his coldly stated answer. "What about Nick? Can it hurt him?" Zev studied Nick like some science experiment that had been badly mutated.
"He might have some immunity now that he's generations removed from the goddess who birthed the first Malachi. That part, I don't know. I'm not even sure it's the same illness as the one I saw on the ancient battlefields. But it's the only thing I can think of that would make Caleb ill. He should be immune from any other known disease."
That at least made sense. Finally. "What of my mother's kidnapping?"
"I know nothing of her being taken, I swear. She was in the kitchen, getting ready for work, when I came in here to sleep. That's all I know of her whereabouts. Had I heard anything, I would have protected her with my life."
Nick inclined his head to him. "All right. Get dressed. We'll be in the kitchen waiting." Zev was dressed before he finished speaking.
"Show me where they grabbed your mother. I'll see if I can detect anything about her assailants."
Nick arched a brow at Cody. "Dang, I need to remember I can do that when I'm running late to school. Those ninja dressing skills are handy." She snorted at his misplaced humor. Nick took them to the rear of the condo, but didn't open the back door since the police were still there. He jerked his chin toward them. "Who or whatever it was attacked her and Mark as they were getting into his jeep, busted him up enough that he was sent to the hospital." A strange look descended over Zeb's face. Nick turned toward Cody. "Is he having a vision, or does he need to go potty?" Cody shoved at him. "Nick, she chided. What? It's the same look that toddlers used to get on their faces in the crying room I had to help monitor as part of my charity work when I was going through confirmation. She groaned out loud. You're awful.
I'm the Malachi, baby.
Nick winked at her, to let her know his cocky attitude was a joke.
Goes with the territory.
Zev's eyes glowed the same way Caleb's and Nick's did whenever they accessed their powers. That was not a joke. Nor was the dark, shrieking cloud that was headed straight for them. At first, Nick thought it was another swarm of mosquitoes, yet as it drew closer, the sound was unmistakable. It was a murder of crows, and not just a standard murder, more like a Quentin Tarantino-style slaughter fest of them, with friends, family, and every feathered acquaintance they'd ever made. In a mad, gory frenzy, the crows attacked like something out of the old Hitchcock film. They descended on the police and people who, screaming and cursing, ran for cover while the birds pecked and slashed at them. Thunder and lightning crackled, threatening to dump more rain. Some of the police shot at the birds, but nothing deterred them. Total pandemonium broke out. As people flooded into his building for protection, Nick ran through a mental list of his powers. He could talk to the dead and sort of control zombies. Okay, it didn't work quite the way it should, but it was useless on foul creatures. He had partial telekinesis, which was also iffy at best. His grimoire, that was even lippier and more sarcastic than he was. Of course, if sarcasm were lethal, he'd be a legendary killer. Sadly, that skill only served to get him grounded or added days to his detention. Slammed into lockers by Stone and crew, and it pissed Kirian and Asheron off to no end. His sword, not a good idea to pull that out in front of skittish police. Nothing he had could help with this problem, not even his wings. He wasn't Dr. Doolittle, he had no control over murderous birds that he knew of, but at least the crows didn't appear to be able to enter the building. They stopped at the threshold, as if the protection spells Manyara and Caleb had put in place were binding for them, too. Even so, Zev pulled them back, further into the building.
Death, he breathed. Those are his carrion birds of choice. You think he sent them here?
Nick went cold at the mention of Grimm. Does this mean he had anything to do with my mother's disappearance? Zev considered that.
Oh, he's looking for you, perhaps.
Cody met Nick's gaze. Grimm does know where you live and who your mother is, what she means to you. Maybe he decided to go rogue and on the attack? Grimm also knew that his father was dead, that Nick had come into his full Malachi powers. Though he should be subservient to the Malachi, that really wasn't their relationship. Death had a massive superiority complex where Nick was concerned. Even so, it didn't quite add up. Up until now, Grimm had been casually insulting and somewhat helpful. Nick glanced back at the murder of crows that was eyeballing them through the barrier. But why snatch her and send those, he jerked his chin at the crows, after me? It's not like he doesn't have my phone number. Literally. Had he called, I'm dumb enough to have met him somewhere without the theatrics. Zev's scowl deepened as the crows moved to sit on the sills of the building as if waiting for something specific to happen. It was so creepy, it made the hair on the back of Nick's neck stand on end. The ancient god stepped back and paled even more. Her own features paling, Cody bit her lip at the way Zev reacted to them. What is it? He moved closer to the window, then fell back again.
The Mementim.
Mema who? Nick asked.
Mementim. They were the soldiers used against Aralim.
He turned to face Nick.
Back in the day, they were under the command of Malthus. They were his army.
I don't understand.
Long before Caleb met his wife and decided to live the life of a peaceful farmer, he fought with my mother and his against our father. He was one of the Mavromino's greatest and strongest generals. The Mementim were his soldiers that he used against the Colossum. After centuries of warring against us and laying waste to mankind, he switched sides because of his wife, then swore off his sword forever. When the Mementim went after him and refused to let him live in peace, he single-handedly put them down, and they swore vengeance upon him. These are their spirits, and they're here to make good on their vow.
His gaze burned into Nick.
Someone resurrected them for their revenge.
How do you know that?
You're the Malachi. Listen to them, and you can hear it in their cries.
Nick tilted his head as he closed his eyes and did what Zev said. He opened up the part of himself that honestly terrified him. Any time he tapped those powers, there was always a part of his heart scared that he wouldn't make it back to be normal again. A part scared that he'd be lost to the darkness forever. But Zev was right. He could hear them now.
Malthus, we've come for you. It's time for you to pay for what you've done. Come out and face us, you craven dog.
Nick almost told them he wasn't here, that they had the wrong address, then caught himself. Better they stay misinformed. So long as they were surrounding the wrong building, they wouldn't be trying to break into the right one and kill his friend. Yet one thing he knew for certain. Those crazy batty crows weren't going anywhere. Not until they had Caleb's heart in their bloody little beaks. And they had no intention of allowing anyone else to leave the building either. Something proven when one of the cops tried and the birds descended on him like a bunch of winged piranhas. People screamed as two cops shot at the birds in an attempt to drive them off their colleague. While they were distracted, Nick opened the door to return to his individual condo unit and let Zev and Cody in before they got caught in the crossfire. Cody stepped away from the door.
I don't understand. If the Mehmetim want revenge on Caleb, why are they here? Shouldn't they be at Caleb's?
Zev shrugged.
His most recent scent would have been at your school, or on Nick. It must be what they locked onto and followed when they were freed. Since they're carrion spirits, they can't come into this building because it's protected. And they can't find him because Nick teleported him to his home, correct?
Yeah.
Then Caleb should be safe. For now.
Again with the should, Nick mumbled. Really hate that word. Ignoring his comment, Cody crossed her arms over her chest.
Could they have made Caleb sick?
You're focused on the wrong concern.
Zev stepped away from them.
Meaning?
Zev looked past her shoulder to the window, where more crows were gathering.
It's not whether or not they carried the illness that should concern you. It's who opened the hell gate that unleashed them.
Chapter 6. Nick grimaced at Zev's dire words. Dude, if my gut draws any tighter, I'm gonna pass a diamond soon. So what hellgate doth thou mean now, my lord demon, or is it demon lord? Zev ignored his sarcasm.
You should know, since you're part of the Usumgalu that controls them, or more to the point, the head of the beast.
Yeah, but see, in the midst of my learning all about econ, biology, locker combinations, and American history, they foolishly ignored and neglected this part of my most vital education, and so I'm seriously lacking. Please do catch me up before any more loathsome creatures come perching on my sill and singing me such lovely death serenades. Zev ignored his sarcasm.
You know the story of Pandora's box?
Yeah.
It wasn't a box or a jar the curious human opened that unleashed those ill spirits into the world. It was a living membrane she ruptured that could never again be closed or healed. That's why death, bane, and war are always in this realm with humanity. Why no one can defeat them or banish them completely, not even I.
Sighing wearily, Zev closed the curtains to block the crows from seeing into the condo and spying on them.
Because of one woman's defiance of a divine order, mankind was forever condemned to suffer them and their cruelty, with no way to fully banish them from this human plane. Think of it as the 11th hour for man, forever walking hand in hand with their own destruction and death, with humanity's only tenuous hope for salvation being this terrifying thing we